From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Thursday, January 23rd, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunafchi, Shawa, Toeksik Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. Today, live music from the forest that never sleeps ahead of a concert this weekend as part of the Jack Winter season. We discover the Cultural Ambassador Program, which is an historic collaboration between Tlingit Ng'haida and the USDA Forest Service. And Southeast Alaska Independent Living is offering a brain reboot course beginning in February, a confidential and supportive cohort for those experiencing a brain injury and their caregivers. We find out how you can participate. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clenady have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
The passage first is read. So go to sleep and rest your weary mind. The garden's always growing in the morning that you'll find. From the kale to the pale birch trees, feel his vines winding round her knees. Wrap her up in your heart-shaped leaves. Sweeter than the sweetest. Flower in the garden.
Beautiful. That right there is music from. That's called The Garden. It's from The Forest That Never Sleeps, which is the title of the solo project from musician Kat Moore. Kat, along with some special guests, will be performing this Sunday, January 26th, at Holy Trinity Church at 6 p.m. as part of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council winter season. Tickets are available at jahc.org. Gunath Cheez, Cha Yigudu, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you here. Kat, Wasi Iti, how's it going?
Oh, thank you so much, Boston. It's a real treat to be here. It's just...
It's so special and so lovely to be in Juneau and then to be able to come on the radio and share with you and all your listeners is like a cherry on top.
It's such a great thing to be able to have live music on our red carpet stage right here.
I know. The carpet's so nice.
Yeah, Studio 2K. And we love the red carpet stage. We love hearing musicians come in and play for us. And you are from Anchorage. So besides the concert that you're doing here on Sunday, what is bringing you to town?
So what actually brought me to town was a recording session with Josh Fortenberry, one of your own here in Juneau. He's recording his second album with Justin Smith, who's an amazing engineer from Gustavus. So he recorded his first album with Justin, I think maybe 2 years ago, maybe a year ago. I feel like it was very recent, but I fell in love with that album.
And yeah, I love that album. We did a whole Songwriters on Songwriters episode with Josh. You can find that on our website, but it's a beautiful album.
It's so good.
Yeah, we love that Josh lives right here in Juneau. And then he's bringing musicians down from Anchorage to participate on the new album, and that he's doing another one. That's really great news to hear.
Yeah, I think I raved long enough that he was like, you want to just come play on this one? I was like, heck yeah, please.
Just come on down. And you can follow everybody on Instagram. The Forest That Never Sleeps is on Instagram. Josh Fortenberry with one R.
Yep.
And is in the Barry is on Instagram as well. And they've been posting pictures of the setup and
the fact
that it's been happening, which is kind of cool. So let's clear up one thing at the start here. So The Forest That Never Sleeps is the name of the solo project, but it's also a lot of times it's how you are referred to.
I think it sort of stuck. Originally, I was playing a lot with a band called the Super Saturated Sugar Strings. It's a band that I kind of like fell into the Alaska music scene with. But when I started a solo project, I decided I would come up with a cool, ambiguous name that made me sound super awesome, like the city that never sleeps, you know, something cool. And my sister was like, you're a hippie. You can't be the city. Like, you don't even wear shoes half the time you play piano. So we decided the forest that never sleeps. But I tend to be a pretty big night owl, and I like to spend a lot of time out in the woods. And so... So it's kind of become a nickname. It's taken on, I don't know if the project took on a life of its own or if the life of its own just kind of led over to the project.
Right. But your friends call you Cat.
They call me Cat, yeah.
Yeah, that's really great. And you are also, you play tons of instruments. You're a poet and you're a singer-songwriter. And can you tell us a little bit about the song you just sang, The Garden?
Yeah, so that tune is one that I wrote many, many years ago. And I did record it once, actually, with the Sugar Strings, but the recording that you can find online is actually on piano. Mm. But it was originally written on guitar, and I love playing it on guitar. Generally, I'm a pretty big strummer. I like to play rhythm guitar, but it's really fun to finger pick and just has weird changes. And it's kind of just a dreamy little number about, you know, about kind of love. And it sounds a little strange, but it's actually a love song.
No, I love it because, like, the lyrics in there, like, the wraps around. I mean, you can sort of visual. I mean, do you think visually when you're writing?
Well, this song is an interesting one because I actually wrote it in my sleep. No joke. I had a night, we went out, you know, played a show, and I came home, went to bed. And the next day I woke up, and I'm a pretty tidy person, and there was this random paper in the middle of my floor, and I was like, what? And I remember I had woken up in the night, like, coughing a little bit or something, and I finally picked up the paper, and it was my handwriting. And I had written stuff down that I don't remember writing down, and then I didn't actually score it to music until probably 6 months later.
Wow.
But generally, I do think pretty visually. I like to think of writing as, like, a chance to kind of, like, paint a landscape, like a sonic landscape, and especially writing that's inspired by Alaska, because Alaska is just so beautiful. Like, half the things I write, whether it's poems or songs, are usually about either experiences I've had here with the people here who are amazing, or, you know, the landscape and interacting with it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I love that. So I'm curious, what is your superhero origin story?
Oh, my goodness. I was like, thank you to the Taproot in Anchorage. No, I have always played piano by ear. Growing up, my sister took piano lessons. She's a couple years older than me, and I was too young for lessons. But after her lessons, I would walk into the room, and I'd sit down, and I'd play her songs. Like, I could just hear notes.
Oh.
And so I started playing by ear, and then, you know, gradually, if an instrument came around, I would just try and learn it, and that's kind of how I started learning guitar. And eventually somebody needed a bass player, and that's how I started learning bass. And so kind of just curiosity with sounds and wanting to create sounds is kind of how it all began. But I was playing the washtub bass, which is literally like a bucket and a stick and a string.
As like I was a bass player in a little trio called Down Home Easy in Anchorage. I was playing with my boyfriend and his buddy and a couple of friends or a couple of strangers who would become very, very good friends came in and heard me play. And they were like, hey, you know, we're looking for a fourth person for our band, which would become the Super Saturated Sugar Strings. And at the time, they had a guitarist, a cellist, and a violin player. And they had seen me play guitar, cello, and violin. But they were like, well, you play anything else? And I was like, I play piano. They were like, why don't you come play piano and see how it goes? And the rest is history.
Wow. That's so fun. Age was that you started, you know, copying your sister, basically?
I think I was probably 4 or 5.
So do you feel like it was... It sounds like you're sort of... Are you self-taught then, pretty much?
Yes. I learned by ear, and I still learn really heavily by ear. When I was about 29 years old, I decided to go to college to learn to read music.
That's what I was wondering. Do you read music? So you do now.
That I would like to answer yes to that question. I'm like, if any
you're
of
learning,
my,
you're on your learning journey.
If
of
any of
music.
My students or their parents are listening, of course, no. I'm a very slow reader when it comes to grand staff music, like piano music, treble and bass at the same time. I can read, but there's like a skill of sight reading, which is just putting a piece of music in front of somebody and then playing it. Like, I'm very slow at that. It takes me a while still to get it through when I'm doing both hands on piano. But I read cello music, I read bass music, starting to teach myself to read guitar music. I can read violin. So like single staff things I'm pretty comfortable with. But yeah, for the most part, my ear is always on. I have to turn it off to use my eyes.
That's so interesting because it feels like, especially starting at such a young age, that it was, you know, I mean, I guess I'm thinking of that song, The Music Is, you know, I got the music in me. Like, it just seems like it was part of your being.
Yeah. And I think there was like a voracious appetite for it. You know, we always talk about talent, like, oh, you're so talented. And I'm like, I don't know if it's talent or just like so interested. Mm. And for me, like, I remember the very first song I ever heard that I was like, I need to hear that every single day. Was Beethoven's Sixth. It was a pastoral symphony. And it was in a cartoon that I had at the house. My mom had like a VHS of this little cartoon called The White Seal. And it was scored to the entire pastoral, which is a theme. It's like, ya da 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 dum ba dum ba da ba da. And I just was obsessed with that melody. So I went and found it on the piano. And then I would always just pick out things that I wanted to hear, you know. And so for me, I think it was like this really strong hunger for those sounds. And yeah, and so it was much faster for me since I didn't know how to read. It was much faster for me to learn them by using my ear. And so that's kind of the skill I practiced over life.
It's so interesting because I think like that is the thing, right? Like talent, I know a lot of people say that, but really what that is like something that is, it's like potential that is then skilled.
Exactly.
Like it really has to be skilled. People have a lot of potential. Some people have potential to do things they don't really go after,
right?
So then they're not going to necessarily be talented in that area, right?
But if you do it all the time,
if
you like doing something, you're going to do it all the time.
And you're going to build that skill, and you're just going to become Cat Moore or the forest that never sleeps. Yeah. All right, so this concert on Sunday, it's at 6 p.m., doors open at 5:30. You're going to be at the Holy Trinity Church downstairs in McPheeters Hall.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about what we're going to be hearing on Sunday.
I'm really excited. I'm mostly excited because this is the first time I'm getting to jam with my friend Bob Banghart.
I
play with.
Juno legend.
Yeah, we play together in Raising Holy Hell, you know, so come around once a year, play Folk Fest, and maybe get a couple other shows up in Esther and all this stuff, but we very rarely get to see each other and play, and so this is the first time we've ever played any of my original music, and he's just such a brilliant violinist, and he plays every style, you know, old-time jazz, folk, everything in between, And so I invited him to come join me on some tunes, and he brought over a 5-string electric violin with a C string on the bottom. And it's like, oh, the voice, it's so beautiful. It's really cool. It's got this like depth and this timbre that's just so warm and resonant. And yeah, I'm just really excited to jam with him on Sunday and to share that with everybody.
That sounds really cool.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, an electric violin that has like an extra chord,
extra low
right?
string, right?
Okay.
So it's like kind of like, it's basically like if a violin and a cello had a baby.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
So it's got all the strings that a violin has and all the strings that a cello has.
That is cool.
It's
and
really
we're going to be
cool.
hearing, you're going to be playing some new music?
Yes, I've been writing new songs and I've been writing these really sort of dreamy piano pieces, and they have a big piano in there, like a big real piano. So, yeah, I'm really excited to just like get behind their piano and just go to town.
That's going
to
be so fun. And so where do people, I know I mentioned Instagram earlier, The Forest That Never Sleeps, yeah. But where do people hear other music? Are you on Bandcamp or all those places?
I am on Bandcamp and SoundCloud and Spotify and iTunes. I have different music on SoundCloud, actually, than on all the other streamers. Some weird songs that I haven't put out on the major platforms yet. But, yeah, you can find me on all the major streamers as The Forest That Never Sleeps. But then I also have music up on the major streamers with a band called The Lateral Lines.
Okay.
And then also music up with the Super Saturated Sugar Strings. So all kinds of stuff.
Not only do you have your solo project, yeah. You also have all these other bands that you're in.
A lot of bands.
And we'll see you back here again for Folk Fest in just a couple months. Okay.
Heck yeah.
Cool. And you're going to play another song for us.
Yeah.
What's this one called?
This one is called Last Night, and it's a waltz.
And tell me a little bit about how you wrote this.
This song came into my head as I was driving home from Salmon Fest in Nanilchik last year. It's a nice long drive, and you're kind of, you know, decompressing and reflecting on everything that happened over, like, the busiest weekend of summer. And the jams there go pretty late at night. And I walked away from one jam, and I found a couple of my buddies, my buddy Tim Easton and Jim Lewin and Tyson Alteri, standing around, all holding guitar cases. And they're all phenomenal guitar players. And I was like, oh, you guys going to jam somewhere? And they were like, yeah, but they're playing, like, pop songs. We need to find a fire where we can just, like, play old country songs. And I was like, well, I think we just need a fire then. And our buddy Mark Barnhill was like, I'll build you a fire. What do you need? You need a fire? I'll make you a fire if you're going to play us songs. So he made us, we walked around, found a spot, and he made us a fire like at probably like 1 in the morning. And we jammed until dawn. And on the way home, I was just so thankful because if he hadn't made that fire, I might have gone to bed and missed that whole jam, you know. And so it was, you know, even though Mark isn't a musician, he appreciates music so much, and it just was really touching how much, like, whether we play or whether we listen or whether we dance, like, we all interact with music, and we all make it the special gift it is. It takes all of us.
I love that. It's so Alaskan, too, that story.
I know. Oh, my gosh. And the jams are so good.
Why don't you hop back up to the red carpet stage. I'll remind everybody what's happening. It's The Forest That Never Sleeps, a.k.a. Kat Moore. She'll be playing Sunday night at the Holy Trinity Church in McPheeters Hall at 6 p.m. Doors open at 5:30. It's all part of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council winter season. Tickets are available at jahc.org. And Kat is going to do a little capoing and tuning and as she gets ready to play this song called Last Night. Once again, The Forest That Never Sleeps, right here on Juno Afternoon.
All right. You lit the fire so that we could all play tunes until the dead of night. You gave us light to gather around. We felt the love, the sound of harmony on steel-wound strings as guitars ring, embracing us and bringing others in. Flames cut the morning wind, wishing it would never end. Let's sing a song, let's share a tune. Make a new friend beneath that waxing crescent moon. Let's dance a waltz by firelight. Twirl everyone around that fire so bright. We'll live every day like our last night. Like our last night. Like our last night. This next verse is inspired by the fact that I lost my sandals at Salmon Fest. Real life sorrows. We're winding down. Soon nothing will be left but all our memories and the lost and found. Soon we'll feel autumn, all those fire we'd forgotten, with the midnight sun and Kenai River runs.
flames caught the morning wind. Wishing it would never end. Let's sing a song, let's share a tune. Make a new friend beneath that waxing crescent moon. Let's dance a waltz by firelight. Twirl everyone around that fire so bright. We'll live every day like our last night. Live every day like our last night.
If you're at home and you want to sing along, this is a time. In Boston, if you want to sing along right here, you don't need the mic, just sing where you are. Here we go. Live every day like our last night.
Live every day like our last night. Live every day.
You got it.
Like our last night. Live every day like our last night. Live every day like our last night. Live every day, hey, hey. Like our last night. Live every day like our last night. Like our last
The forest that never sleeps, everybody.
Thank you so much, Boston, for having me today.
Gwyneth Cheese, thank you for being here. Up next, we take a virtual journey out to the glacier and learn about the collaboration between Tlingit and Haida and the USDA Forest Service and the Cultural Ambassador Program. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO. And now, the Tlingit Word of the Week.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from Kakul'at Florence Marks Shakley. And the word this week is ayauditi.
Ayauditi.
That means it's stormy. And here is a sentence. It's very stormy today. Let's hear it again.
Ayauditi.
It's stormy. Gunas Chish to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation and the University of Alaska at Southeast for this audio.
Kakashat Florence Mark Shakley is Shukach Adi and a child of a Chukanidi man. She grew up on Mark's trail in a family that used Tlingit as the primary language and were involved in documenting, teaching, and publishing in Tlingit. She has taught the language at all levels and has served as the teacher of teachers in the Juneau area for decades now.
And please tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
We are still here. We have been here, and we're not going anywhere, but we want people to know that we are inviting you to come and learn.
We are being tasked, working for Tlingit and Haida, as cultural ambassadors to bring the cultural side out here.
We are educating people on our history of us out here on this land and us taking care of the lands and being good stewards. We're slowly indigenizing spaces. We wanted the people to actually see that we're starting to bring our language to the forefront.
It's very important that we have Tlingit and Tlingit words all over so people understand who we are, where we come from, what our language is.
Sit-on-Taku is the glacier just upland of the town. And then the other one is Oktok-Sit, and that's the glacier behind Ok Lake.
I love talking to people, and I love telling them the history, me growing up as a little boy here, and they're interested in what you're doing. They love to listen to what you have to say because, you know, a lot of them have never been here before and never been to Alaska, but they're just at awe of the beauty.
I'd actually want to keep expanding, and as we're doing the renovations, the Forest Service has been talking with us and what can we do with the renovations to kind of make things a little more indigenized. So we are looking at totem poles, we are looking at different items that be coming out here, so when people come out here they understand this is native land. You know, this belongs to the Akwan people, so this is what we want to bring out and show them.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. A recent program was created between Tlingit and Haida and the USDA Forest Service. It's called the Cultural Ambassador Program. It's part of a co-management strategy to educate visitors about Tlingit history, culture, language, and connection to the land. And I am joined now in studio to help us learn more by Jeremy Timothy, the Cultural Ambassador Manager, and by Tristan Duville, Indigenous Stewardship Programs Special Projects Coordinator. It's a long title, but what's cool about that, Tristan, is it doesn't have any ampersand in it, which is kind of cool. But Kunith Chishat Yeadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio here today. Wasiati, how's it going?
Pretty good. So,
pretty good?
Yeah, pretty good. I'm excited to be here and talk about our program and just get everything launching and get ready for the next year.
I love it. Because this started last year, right?
Yes.
Okay. And was last summer sort of the first summer of this program happening?
Yeah, last year was our first year of okay. running the program.
Because I remember there were some articles and there was you were looking for people to be ambassadors, right? Were you hiring ambassadors?
Yes, that's
okay.
correct.
Okay, cool. And how many did you end up having last summer?
We had 9 ambassadors. I had, which break it down, we had 2 leads and 7 ambassadors. So it was a pretty good number for us being out there, and we had a couple different shifts out there. And it worked out really good.
Okay, that's cool. And Tristan, tell me a little bit about what your, I mentioned your long title, Indigenous Stewardship Program Special Projects Coordinator. What is that?
Yeah, so I support the program doing program management, and I do a lot of the administrative support, a lot of the marketing. I'm doing the lead on a lot of our recruitment efforts.
Okay.
And the Cultural Ambassador Program is one of the really incredible, innovative programs that I'm blessed to steward at Tlingit and Haida.
That's awesome. So how did this particular program come about, Jeremy?
So this started about 2021 when we had a joint secretary agreement. They had basically saying that the Forest Service, the USDA and the Department of Agriculture got together and they said, hey, you know, we have all this forest land, we have all this parks, you know, they're being stewards of them, but we recognize that the native people have been the stewards of these lands for thousands and thousands of years. And so they came up with a joint secretary agreement, and then at the end of 2023 is when Tlingit Haida and the Forest Service got together, and we came up with our agreement that we are going to be co-stewards at the Menhaul Glacier.
I think that's awesome.
Yes.
That's really cool. And in that video we heard, that was a video that's available from Tlingit Haida's YouTube, a little bit about the Culture Ambassador Program. Tristan, did you put that together? Is that how you?
Our wonderful communications team put that together.
I see. Okay. Yeah. Rayanne and all those folks over at the communications department.
Yeah.
Yeah, wonderful. And you also have this really cool brochure, which I love. It sort of just gives a quick idea about what this program is. So tell me a little bit about this, Jeremy. Like, what is the purpose of the Cultural Ambassador Program?
So one of our purposes is that if you gone out to the glacier probably like 2 years ago or anything even longer than that, you'll see that there's nothing out there that represents the Tlingit people. There's nothing out there that represents the culture, the people that's been living on this land for thousands and thousands of years. You know, we're just not represented there. And with this co-stewardship, this is the first step of us being recognized and being out there. And we're answering questions for the tourists and the guests that come out there. And we are starting to, I think someone in the video actually says the word indigenize. So we're starting to indigenize that location. So, you know, we are talking about anything from button blankets to drums to halibut hooks. We have videos of celebration playing, and people could come and interact with us and ask us questions, you know, if they are just curious about our culture, our history, or our traditions. We're there to answer those questions. And at the end of the season, we were actually able to bring back a 7-foot cotilla, like a totem pole, and had a ceremony for that. It used to be there at the visitor center, and then it moved out. And with this co-stewardship, we thought it was important that we bring it back.
Mm.
And so we, at the end of the season, we brought it back, and then we shared a traditional meal with the forest rangers and said, hey, here's some deer stew, and had a dance group out there and had a ceremony for it, and it turned out really great.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that the cotilla is coming back in there. And isn't there a plan to maybe install a few more around that area?
There's an idea that we have. We're still in the talk, so we're still at the very early stages. Very beginning stages of that.
Yeah.
So we're making it known that this is something we'd like to do, and there's steps that we have to follow in order to follow through with that.
Yeah, I know. It's a long planning process. I know Sea Alaska Heritage is also installing some different totem poles around town, and it's taking a long time as well to get those all in place. Now, also in that video we heard, you were mentioning sort of the Tlingit names for the glacier. One was Auktoxit, right, which is the glacier upland from the lake, right, Auk.
Yes.
And then what was the other one? Oh, it was Sit-Ot-Taku,
yes.
Right? Okay, and that is the glacier behind town.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, is that from town out the road, or from, are they referring it to as from town here? Because I guess behind is, right? I'm just thinking for myself, it's from where I live, which is over on this side of town, but I know other people live out Auk Rek area and things like that. So I guess it depends on where you would be when you would use what name for the glacier, right?
Right, and I know they both were used at certain points, and so I don't know where the glacier was at which name.
Right.
Because there was a village out at Auk Rek.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering is if it, so. What we need is Dr. Twitchell to tell us where that was from. And is there any sense of, you know, some of the places have we're in this place of sort of putting Tlingit names on different areas of towns. The schools are adding back some names. I know I saw one of them in here, Coxtagoo-Heen, which I know is one of the elementary schools, which means runs clean river. What's interesting is I'm wondering, is there any talk about renaming the glacier from the Culture Ambassador Program, or is that would be with some different people?
So that's going to be a different committee.
Yeah.
But there has been talks of renaming different places out at the glacier.
Yeah.
So like one of them right now is we are working on renaming the term Suicide Basin.
Right.
That's something, you know, a lot of people just frown upon, and it's just kind of a really negative feeling when you talk about it. So
yeah,
there has been talks about that. And whenever the Forest Service are building new cabins, they're actually coming to Tlingit Haida and saying, hey, we're building a new cabin. We would like to have a Tlingit name.
Mm.
And so that's something that we are also working on.
That's really cool that not only is the city, but that the federal, the USDA is working with Tlingit Haida to sort of make this happen. And I know, Tristan, also in that video is mentioned sort of putting both names, right? Sort of having Tlingit and then also having English and just being able to let visitors and also actually residents who don't know, right, in terms of what those different areas or different things would be called. So what kinds of things are we putting those names on? Is it just different areas of the park or the area?
Yeah, so within the region, there are a lot of things that regional leadership has the authority to rename or place names on as they're building. Cabins, trails, I don't know, the parking lot could have a name, right?
Like, right.
So it's all about like imbuing Tlingit representation from the ground up. And the really beautiful part about the process is we're really asserting, you know, nothing about us without us. And so having a seat in those decision-making tables is one of the coolest parts about this Coast Stewardship Agreement. We're really great partners. It's been great to work with the Forest Service.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm curious about both of you personally, like in terms of your journeys. How did you get started? Tristan, we'll start with you. How did you get started with Tlingit and Haida and, you know, and this idea of working on these kinds of projects?
Well, I was actually in Washington, D.C. last year. I was a presidential appointee in the Biden administration working in Department of Energy headquarters. And I got really excited about all of the incredible projects happening at Tlingit and Haida. And I found a job at what was called Native Lands and Resources at the time. And one of my first assignments was executing our Coast Stewardship Agreement at Mendenhall Glacier.
That's cool. And are you from Juneau? Did you grow up here?
Oh, I'm from Craig and Kluwak on Prince of Wales Island.
Okay.
I should have said that at the beginning. My grandmother is going to scold me. My Tlingit name is Dinawase, and I'm Shunkwedi from Craig and Kluwak on Prince of Wales Island.
There we go. Now grandma will be proud, right?
Yes,
yes, definitely. And Jeremy, tell us a little bit about you and where you're from.
I better also introduce myself because I also have a grandma. So my name is Auntie Ailey, and I am from Tlukut Kwan, up in Haines, and I'm Raven Sockeye. I was born and raised in Juneau, left, joined the military, did that for 20 years, retired in Maryland, and I just kind of realized I was getting, like, content with my life there, and there was, like, always a draw to come back home. And so my wife actually said, hey, we're going to come back home to Juneau. Let's go. This is where I know you're going to be happy. And it just happened on the way back home on the road trip that I found out about the job, that there's a culture ambassador. And she's like, you know, this would be a great job for you. You know, you grew up, you know, doing like fish camps up in Haines, doing culture camps. And, you know, I applied for it and I got the job, and it's been great. You know, it's something where, you know, like part of our application or our flyer says, you know, to have a desire to know and to learn, you know, and that's something I still feel like I'm, you know, I'm like 47 years old and I still have a desire to learn and keep growing with the culture. So this is such a great opportunity for myself, is this program.
Yeah, that's really awesome. And I love that there is, you know, Tlingit phrases that you have on the flyer itself, which is telling a little bit about the program, but you mentioned this. Is this a program that is mostly around during the summer months, or does it go year-round?
No, this is a seasonal position.
Seasonal, okay. Yes. And so are you looking for people to apply now to be ambassadors this summer, or are you full?
No, we are definitely looking for seasonal ambassadors for this year. And if they could just want to go on tlingitahaida.com or .gov, and you'll see on their careers, and you just go down to the careers, you'll see the culture ambassadors right there. We are looking for people, and we are hiring.
Okay, that's a good thing to know. Mm-hmm. So yeah, you just go to, it's easy. The easiest site is tlingitandhaida.gov. And they have the longer one, but that's more complicated. And I love that they have the new website. I think, was that your idea, Tristan? Or was that again?
I wish I could take credit for that.
Or was that the communications department?
Of course, they're incredible.
They are. They're a great team over there. It's really awesome. And so, what other are you working specifically on this program, Tristan? I know that Jeremy does because you're the cultural program manager. But are you doing this and some other things?
Yeah. So I work specifically on this because I was a former Fed. So working in government relations is something that really intrigued me when I came back to Tlingit and Haida, is figuring out what the government-to-government relationship looks like in situations like these. And something that's really cool about the Cultural Ambassador Program and the Coast Stewardship of the Glacier is that Tlingit and Haida is able to amplify funding available to Juno for projects like cultural tourism, because we're able to braid different streams of federal monies and private monies that allow us to stand up programs like the Cultural Ambassador Program. And it's providing a new career pathway for all of our tribal citizens, which is just so incredible.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Like the land stewardship is so vital, right? It's so vital. And the fact that the USDA is partnering with Tlingit and Haida to make this happen is just really cool. And of course, you can find out, what's the best place to, do you have like a Facebook page for the Cultural Manager Program, or is there Cultural Ambassador Program? No. Or is it all listed on the website?
It's all listed on the website.
Okay. Yeah, and you can learn more at tlingitandhaida.gov. It's the Cultural Ambassador Program. They are hiring for this summer. When does it start? Does it start like when the cruise ship starts around? Is it April or so?
Well, we're going to start a little bit before that because we do provide training.
Right.
Got to train everybody. And so we want to make sure that people are trained, they're comfortable in their positions. And, you know, with the first couple ships, it's like maybe one ship a week.
Right.
You know, so it's like a soft start, and that's really helpful for new ambassadors.
Get people up to speed.
Correct. And kind of like if we have to do like on-the-spot corrections and say, hey, you know, maybe next time try this.
Right.
But it does give us a chance to work out the kinks. So, yes, we are hiring, and we are looking at starting, you know, a couple weeks before the first boat comes in.
Awesome. That's so great. Tristan, Jeremy, thank you so much for coming in. Gunnath Cheesh for telling us about the program. It's a fantastic new program that comes from Tlingit and Haida in partnership with the USDA Forest Service. It's the Cultural Ambassador Program out at the Glacier. I really appreciate you taking the time today. Gunnath Cheesh.
Gunnath Cheesh.
Okay. Up next, we talk with SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, about their upcoming brain reboot course for those experiencing or supporting those experiencing a brain injury. But first, a star party right here on Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosas with the Reintegrate Planetarium. I'm going to talk about the aurora. The new year started in Juneau with an excellent display of the aurora, and we should continue to see good displays of the aurora in 2025 because it's a solar max year. Every 11 years, there's a cycle in the sun that the sunspot count is at its max. That's what's happening in 2025. And the aurora is caused by three ingredients: charged particles from the sun that take 1 to 3 days to get to the Earth because they have mass. When they are drawn in by Earth's magnetic field, they are absorbed by gases in the upper atmosphere, and then those gases release that energy in the form of light that we see as the aurora borealis in the north and the aurora australis in the south. We call them the northern lights. Typically, the colors are white, but we can see green and, in extreme cases, yellows and reds, and there's various shapes to the northern lights. Now, it turns out that the northern lights, when we have a really good display, they may repeat in 27 days because that's the time it takes for the sun to rotate. So it's possible that the January 1st display will repeat itself towards the end of January, so that's something to look forward to. We do get forecasts for the northern lights. The NOAA Space Weather gives forecasts 1 to 3 days in advance, and also the University of Alaska at Fairbanks, its geophysics department, gives aurora forecasts. So on your search engine, just put in aurora forecast, and you can check if there's prediction of a return of the northern lights, which is always a beautiful thing to see on a clear night. This is Steve Kosas with the Reintegrate Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at reintegrateplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
You are listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. I'm joined now in studio by Kimberly Sumner from SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, along with Shannon Hendricks, also from SAIL. Gunath Cheesh, Ha Ye Adi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio. Was Iti, how's it going today?
It's going really great. Gunath Cheesh, Boston, for allowing us to be here today.
Of course.
And talking about our new passion project. So.
Yeah. So first, before we do that, let's get to know you both a little bit. Kimberly, tell me a little bit about what you do at SAIL.
So I'm the Traumatic and Acquired Brain Injury Coordinator for Southeast Alaska. It's a mini grant program, and I do a lot of independent living coaching. That's, you know, a grant that anyone with a traumatic or acquired brain injury could apply for.
Oh, okay.
Southeast Alaska. So it's not just Juneau, but it's Sitka, Ketchikan, Haines, Petersburg, Prince of Wales Island, so just all of Southeast.
That's nice. So if people are interested there, or if they're hearing this and they have somebody who might live in one of those communities, they can look into that.
Of course.
Yeah, absolutely. That's and of course, everything we're talking about today can be found on SAIL's website, which is sailinc.org, sailinc.org. Yeah. So, and SAIL, of course, I said stands for Southeast Alaska Independent Living. And Shannon Hendricks, hi.
Hi.
Tell us a little bit about what you do at SAIL.
So, I'm the Juno Program Director. So, I oversee the different programs we run. So, SAIL works to empower seniors and individuals with disabilities. So, we run quite a few different programs. And I get to work on those different programs. And one of those is the Traumatic and Acquired Brain Injury Program that Kim runs.
Nice. Okay. And how long have you been with SAIL?
I just started in September.
So you're a newbie.
Yes.
Where did you come from?
I came from Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. And did you move up here to work at SAIL?
I did.
Oh, awesome. Had you wanted to live in Juneau before? Or?
It was not on my radar. But once I heard of SAIL and got to come up and visit, I fell in love and made the move.
But it is northwest still. Like yes. Portland was still northwest, so it wasn't too much of a shock in terms. But we have a little more rain than Portland, right?
A little more rain, but a little more snow.
Yeah.
And the mountains are closer, so
yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Well, welcome. Welcome to Juno. And
thank
welcome
you.
To SAIL. So let's talk first a little bit about just set the table here, Kim. Can you tell us just a little bit about TBI? What is a brain injury, traumatic brain injury? What is that?
Yeah, thank you. So a traumatic brain injury is any blunt force trauma done to the head. So you're looking at automobile accidents, snowmobile accidents, skating, slips on ice. And that's different from an acquired brain injury, which, you know, we could get into both. Acquired brain injury is a stroke or a brain bleed, anything that's internal that wasn't contributed to blunt force trauma. So you're thinking cancer could also be an acquired brain injury.
Okay, yeah. I know I've had some folks on from Bartlett's speech therapy department before, and we were talking about the difference between, you know, traumatic and acquired and the different things that might affect people and their speech in terms of the work that they do. So I just wanted to set the table for people because this class is for anyone experiencing a brain injury, right? So it could be traumatic or acquired, yeah?
Correct. And okay. Also it's for individuals. If you have someone that comes with you to help you move along in the world, a caretaker, they're also invited to the class as well.
Yeah, okay. So caregivers are more than welcome. So how did this course specifically come about?
So I started doing a support group about 2 years ago, and I noticed within the last 6 months the numbers really dropped. So there was nobody coming along. And I really had to take a hard look at it. And one of the things I thought of, people like accomplishments. So at the end of this six-week class, you do get a certificate of completion. But more than that, the people want resources. And it's so hard to gather a lot of resources and a lot of information in one place. So during the 6 weeks, I'm going to have guest speakers, but it's really a place to get resources and get connection. And hopefully people will walk away not only with those resources, but community, a new community. So I just saw a need, a great need for people to have resources that we have available in the community, and there wasn't a place where people can get those resources in one place.
Yeah. And Shannon, I know Kimberly just mentioned community, right, which is huge. And these kinds of programs, I'm assuming this program as well as many others at SAIL, really sort of, you know, empower that, right? Sort of, so you're not going through things alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, essential.
Yeah, very, very essential to the experience. And so is there other programs that are short course like this, or things that are longer term as well, Shannon?
Typically, the programs at SAIL are longer term. We do have a low vision support group. We have a deaf support group that meet regularly. And then we have quite a few different activities through our outdoor recreation that have more seasonal programming. So right now they just started their ski season up at Eagle Crest.
Right. That's right, because they do that cool summer program, right, that they do, that you guys have?
Yeah, they have multiple trips a year. And then the summer program, they have kayaking, canoeing, and then they have the ropes course that's available.
Yes, the ropes course. Yeah. I know I've had folks on from SAIL to talk about that before, which is really cool. So what are the topics going to be that you're going to be talking about in this particular brain reboot? I love the name, Brain Reboot.
Thank you. I wanted to put something fun on there. To me, it's another support group. You know, like, it's not fun, and I wanted to do something fun. Also, there has never been something like this done before. So the state of Ohio has something similar, but not something I could reference. So I have, like, worked from the ground up doing this program. So there's going to be the first class. It's going to be My Brain Injury and Me. And we're going to have an art event. I went to school for art therapy. So we're going to do an art project there. The second week, it's going to be relationships, whether it be coworkers or intimate partners. You know, how those affected, how have they been affected by my brain injury? How have they been affected by my brain injury? Another group we're going to have is ATLA is going to come out and talk to us.
What is ATLA?
It's an agency that helps with asking for reasonable accommodations and then also the products that go with those reasonable accommodations. So different grippers, different ways to do home modification.
Oh, I see. How you go about. Yeah. Okay. Your daily life, right? Things that can help you in your daily life.
Yeah. And brain injury is an invisible disability in most cases. And so you're talking about stigma. So it's even harder to ask for those accommodations when your disability may not be as visible as somebody else's.
I see. So that particular topic will help people, you know, gain the courage and things like that, how to ask for that stuff. Yeah.
We have Devin from UAS coming out and talking in one group. We have Ellen Andrews, who is going to be, she's a counselor in town. She's coming out and speaking at one of the events. So, I mean, we have a lot of topics. One is going to be medical and therapies. I'm hoping that we're isolated. There's not a lot of therapies here, but maybe we can get a conversation going with community members about what has and hasn't worked and sharing those resources. So really what I hope it comes out of this is individuals that come, there's going to be a really small intimate group of 8 in the beginning. You know, hopefully they build friendships, but mostly I hope they gain resources in the community they didn't know otherwise they could have.
I see. Yeah, that's cool. It sounds like a great, collection of courses. It's over 6 weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about starting this on February 3rd, which is a Monday, and it will be every Monday through March 10th. From 5:30 to 7 p.m.
Correct.
Okay, and this will be out at the SAIL offices?
Yes, on Teal Street.
Okay, on Teal Street. Yeah, that great new facility out there, which is really awesome. And how do people get information or sign up? Did you say it's a limited number of people?
So the first class is going to be 8 people.
Okay.
Like I said, I had to configure this myself, and so I wanted it to be a small, intimate group, but you could go on our online. You can call me or email me at SAIL and I can sign you up. We still have space available. You can go onto our website. It's the first thing that pops up now, which is really exciting. So there's different ways that you could put your name on
get
the
involved.
List.
Is it okay if I give out your email?
Of course.
Yeah, so it's ksumner, ksumner@sailinc.org, or you can call 888 888- 847-487-0979. You might see some flyers around town. There is a QR code on those that you can also take, that'll get you right to the website. But like you said, if you just go to sailinc.org, it's the first thing that pops up, which is great. Was that your doing, Shannon?
I can't take credit for that one, but there is a Facebook event as well, too.
Oh, Facebook event. Okay.
Facebook is available if people want to sign up that way, too.
Yeah, one thing to tell you, Shannon, since you're new to Juno, this is a huge Facebook town.
I've learned. Yes, yes, yes.
Facebook,
that's how I found housing.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah. Nice. Yeah, it's very popular here. A lot of events and, of course, our community collective and also Juno Buy, Sell, Trade and all that kind of thing on Facebook is, and you found your housing there. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I love that. That's great. So that's awesome. And it is, do you hope that you might, you said you wanted to sort of, not that you were gamifying it, Kimberly, but mm-hmm. you were giving a certificate at the end of this. Do you hope that you'll have future versions of this as you go forward, like in like sort of more pockets of time as you go?
Yeah, so my hope is that we do it for 6 weeks, have 2 weeks off, hopefully I get feedback, and then I sort of modify it from that, and then do it 6 weeks again. But the next time I'd like to have 2 classes, and I'd like to have one that's virtual. I understand that it's not accessible for everyone to come in the building, and so I respect and understand that, and then I also want to reach all of Southeast Alaska, so to have a Zoom support group class would be great, but I want the subjects to change as needed, and as people want more information and what topics. So I hopefully there's feedback around what does and doesn't work for someone.
What do you think is the number? You're talking about, you know, hopefully people will gain resources, mm-hmm. right? What's the number one resource that you think is most in need?
Well, medical. We're isolated, so we don't have neurologists here or neurosurgeons. I've had 7 brain surgeries and radiation. My last one was 2 years ago, and all of my doctor's appointment was in Anchorage, and that's just not feasible for a lot of people. Another one is employment. People want to work. They want to get back in the workforce, but they don't know how to ask for reasonable accommodations. Their self-esteem could be a little bit lowered, and so that's another thing. Like mock interviewing is a great skill. Learning who your skills are now after your brain injury is really important. People are still just as wonderful as they were before the brain injury as they are now after the brain injury and as they're recovering. So it's really important to build community and strength and courage through one another. So I would say medical, employment. I mean, but it still goes with the needs of the community all around. Housing is important. Reasonable housing is important. You know, we don't have that. And just those resources from people who really are struggling financially to get the resources they need to recover on top of finding a reasonable, a safe place to live. So we could go on about that forever.
Thank you so much. It's the Brain Reboot course from SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living. It begins on Monday, February 3rd. It runs through March 10th at 5:30 to 7 p.m. each of those Mondays. It's a 6-week confidential and supportive cohort for persons experiencing a brain injury and their caregivers. For more information, you go to sailinc.org or email Kimberly at ksumner, K-S-U-M-N-E-R at sailinc.org. Kimberly, Shannon, thank you so much for coming in today. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
And that will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, we get a preview of the Alaska Music Summit coming to Juno on February 1st, a place for musicians and more to learn and connect about music making in Alaska. Plus, Juno Dance Theater is celebrating 50 years of flying high here in Juno. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday right here on KTOO. For more, go to kto.org/JunoAfternoon. I'm Boston Christopher. Thanks so much for joining us today. Have a good afternoon.
KTOO Juno and KAUK Juno Ok Bay.